Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to celebrate the life of Worst Foot Forward, who sadly died this week when the world ran out of terrible things for us to talk about. Just kidding, this podcast will never end. The only perpetual motion on the planet is awfulness. You're stuck with us forever, listeners. And alongside me is the chief mourner to my constant stiff, Ben Vandeveld.
Whoa, 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 wee.
You know, Irish funerals, Jewish funerals, I imagine they all have their own particularly unique aspects and
Jewish funerals are tedious. I mean, I've not been to a funeral of anyone that I've really cared about, and then I caught myself and realised that's not true. But almost every Jewish funeral I've been to has been an awful grey Eastern European affair that you're awaiting some sort of Cold War assassination to occur at.
Just to liven things up a bit.
Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, wakes are, I imagine, over-idealised in the media, but I like the idea of a big mournful piss up. It's a good way to go.
Yeah, it's a good way to spend the night beforehand. And yeah, in the Irish tradition, you usually have the body laid out at the house, ideally.
Less of a fan of that.
Sometimes you have professional mourners or keeners. They're called Irish for crying is a keener. So a keener or keening comes from that. And so you have people who, you know, you'll have family members be sitting around and crying anyway. But sometimes you genuinely would have professional mourners who'd go to these and would just be there helping to keep the watch. That's why it's called a wake. It's like the watch or a vigil. So you're keeping watch.
I chatted to our mate Archie, who was on the show a billion years ago, and in Trinidad there's the tradition of the nine knights, and you have nine knights of mourning, and I think...
All in suits of armour, nine suits of armour for every funeral. It's a very expensive affair.
Yeah, just the mourning father and mother clanking around going, this is very inappropriate. And I'm sure there's a thing where you're meant to take the deceased's mattress and put it up against the wall, and I believe it acts as some sort of portal to the netherworld.
Oh, nice.
Either that or you're just airing it for the next person who's going to be on.
Yeah.
How would you like your funeral to go?
Oh, I'd be one of those, like, oh, let's everyone dress in nice clothes. You don't have to be in black. And maybe let's have some Douglas Adams rather than some of the Bible. Maybe a fireworks display. And everyone invited back for an orgy at the chief mourner's house at the end of it. So, fingers crossed you go before me, Ben.
A good Lord above, yeah. Very, very different noises coming out of the professional mourners in that situation.
What about you? A roast. A comedy roast while you're being roasted at a crematorium.
Yeah, that seems like... Oh, but on a rotisserie, I want to be slow cooked.
You don't want to lie in state for 3 days. You want to be well hung for 21 days.
Mate, I've been well hung for 38 years.
We both know that is incorrect.
Fine, 38 years and 5 months. It is time to welcome this week's guest, who thankfully has a pulse scudding through his veins, at least for the next 60 minutes. He is a crown prince of podcasters. After cutting his teeth on both Lauren Laverne and Alex Zane's breakfast shows, he went on to work as a producer with Adam and Joe and Danny Wallace. Eventually, he ended up at his broadcasting home for a decade, Absolute Radio, where he moved through the day, beginning on the early breakfast show, moving on to rock and roll football, and eventually settling on the home time show. But he is best known to us, and perhaps you too, as part of the Football Ramble Behemoth, a semi-founding member, along with former guest of this show, Jim Campbell, and possible future guests, Luke Moore and Marcus Speller. He is possibly the only person on Earth who sits at the centre of the Venn diagram containing Japanese culture, impulse buys on eBay, Matt Berry and Hartlepool. We're delighted to welcome one man hymn to eclecticism, Pete Donaldson.
Wow, I sound magnificent, guys. Thank you so much for that, Ben. That's really kind.
I like the way that you mention he's like a former, like on the Football Ramble with former guests and future guests. Like we don't actually want you on the show. We're just like those Panini sticker enthusiasts who were being completionist about our album now.
Or I'm just going to hook you up because I'm like a celebrity agent. But I mean, that sounded, guys, I'm not being funny, that sounded like a career. Now, I never thought I had one or would have one, but that sounds like I've been up to stuff for the last 10 years.
No, it's nice when you hear that because whenever I do these introductions, I feel like they sound like, you know, that meme with the tiny domino leading up to the massive domino. Yes. And that's hopefully the nice thing. Whereas whenever someone reads up my CV, it's just a shaky Jenga tower one block from demolition.
some old boys are playing with you in an actual dominoes match. Yeah. Taking parts of you and kind of moving you around a table in a back room.
Yeah, we're back at a Trinidadian funeral.
Yeah.
I also, I mean, listen, let's be fair, Pete. If the Football Ramble were a Panini sticker page, you'd definitely be the shiny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Look, before we started doing the show, we were talking about Jorge Campos' goalkeeper top. It would definitely be a World Cup 94. Jorge Campos, you know, free kick taking, big gloves, big top. Colours all over the gaff. It'd be something like that, I reckon, definitely.
Is that how you would like to be remembered at your funeral? Just a full 10-year-old's football party?
Yeah. 10-year-old's football party and then off to McDonald's to in the family area. I'd love that. Or a little ball pool or something.
Yeah. Yes! Yeah, as the coffin is slowly lowered into the ball pool. And then set on fire like some sort of deranged Viking toddler funeral.
Jumps in. Imagine, nobody ever talks about the Viking toddlers. What were they up to? What happens to when a toddler died? Did they get like a little tiny coffin out to sea with an arrow? Yeah, I want every one of my friends and family members to get pink eye from the ball pit at my funeral.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful... wonderful idea.
Have you been crying lots over Pete's death? No, it was the ball pool.
It was the stinking ball pool. He bought them cheap. He bought them off Facebook Marketplace and he bought them in bulk.
And then obviously once Pete's cremated, you'll get given a little Happy Meal box to take the ashes home in.
I've just been reminded of there was a show in the University Drama Society in Trinity College when I was there, which had a joke involving, do you remember the ad with the Jose Gonzalez guitar music with the bouncy balls yeah. bouncing down the road in San Francisco? There was a musical sting of that playing, and the joke was they dropped 400 ball pool balls onto the stage from above the stage, just like right on top of the central characters. Like the music was playing really peacefully, and then it just was like a drop of these 400 things. And obviously they then went everywhere. And for the ensuing 4 years of me being in college and in the Drama Society, we would intermittently just find another one of these ball pool balls underneath the seating in the dressing rooms. They were like trying to get glitter out after Pride.
Definitely.
Listen, we know you're very good at collecting all sorts of things, whether it be shiny stickers or infectious diseases. What are you less good at, Pete? What are you worst at in the world?
Staying awake. If you ask anyone I've ever met, and like the Football Ramble boys will definitely concur, I can sleep pretty much anywhere, everywhere, at any time. If you said, Pete, you have to be asleep in 5 minutes, I could literally just fall asleep all the time. I don't have poor sleep. I don't dream vividly to a massive extent. I don't have insomnia or anything that I should be worried about. But I am constantly, I just love sleeping. I know I'm wasting my life doing it, but I'm just very, very bad at staying awake. I just think if I have the choice of being awake and being asleep, I will fall asleep on a bus, on a train, on a plane, just in the streets. Just
sound like a Dr. Seuss sleep. Yeah.
that's the thing that upsets me is when I have stuff like jet lag. When I've got an issue with jet lag, that upsets me because that is the one thing I can do. I can sleep. But jet lag robs that gift from me. But fundamentally, to round it all up, I'm really, really bad at staying awake. I am constantly thinking where my next nap's going to come from.
Is that to put us on the clock and get this wrapped up within the hour?
It is. TikTok, lads. TikTok. Pete's drinking an Ovaltine.
Maybe you just hang out with very boring people. Maybe that's your problem, Pete. You're always just... Yeah. Maybe it's a slight on the Football Ramble, guys.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe that's why you wanted to choose the world's worst funeral, just because, you know, you're always falling asleep and you're just looking forward to the biggest sleep of all.
Mate. Yeah. Yeah, it's the longest. It's the longest, most delicious sleep that everyone's just at any point could endure and enjoy. Where the, you know, the whole world just disappears and you just get to sleep forever. Wow. I honestly, lads, I cannot wait. I guess this probably being classed as suicidal, but if that's suicidal, I'm suicidal. I want the big sleep. I cannot wait. Cannot wait.
I thought you were going to say, if that's suicidal, sign me up, baby.
Night, you're just going to show up at a funeral home with like a night mask and some earplugs.
Yes, I'm ready.
Some lavender spray and a Joe Malone candle, and just lie down in a coffin and wait.
I'll watch one episode of The Office and then go to sleep.
Like, the thought of death and never being around again absolutely terrifies me. But the thought of, like, dying and then maybe waking up after 150 years and go, oh, still dead, just sort of nuzzled down in my coffin.
Yes.
Ah, that's better. That sounds lovely.
Yeah. I have very sort of strong opinion, and you're right, it is absolutely petrifying, the idea of, you know, my belief system is very much, when I go, you go, you go, everyone goes, everyone disappears, I disappear, nothing, because the only way you can experience the world is very much through your own eyes, and I genuinely believe that when I go, everything goes, and that, if I think about that for too long, it's oh my God. So you got to make every second count. But except I'm not, because I find sleep too delicious. I'm not going to achieve anything. Yeah. I'm not going to excel in any part of my life, any facet of my life, because sleep is too delicious, and I'd rather do that every day.
So when the Grim Reaper shows up for you, you're going to be like, I think I've booked a double.
Yes.
The thing is, though, clearly what's happening is what you're basically doing altitude training for death by getting all these little sleeps in.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, you're going to die, and maybe there will be an afterlife, and people will be looking at you just going, bloody hell, Pete's really good at this. Yeah.
This is my Olympics.
Yeah. this week, we're in for a morbid one. We're going to talk about the world's worst funeral. But then again, funeral is an anagram of real fun, so I'm sure we'll manage to find some comedy in there somewhere.
It is, wow!
Ben, you're going to lower the first coffin.
So we've already talked about professional mourners, and the first funeral I'd like to talk about one had some extreme versions of this. The very famous movie star Rudolph Valentino died at the age of 31, and at his funeral, police were called to keep the rioting fans contained. So it was almost like Beatlemania, but at a funeral. And there were upwards of 100,000 mourners there. However, it later came out that Frank E. Campbell, who was basically the stage manager of the funeral, had paid people to act hysterical and devastated. And why did he do that? Not for Valentino, but as an advertisement for his own funeral home.
No.
Oh, no. I thought, like, at best he'd be like a guy who had a film, an unreleased film from Valentino that he had to release. But just a funeral home, just the general advertisement for just death in general. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the take is. Kind of like, if you go to my funeral home, then when you die, people will be this upset. But it's an interesting tactic.
We can handle even your most riotous of funerals.
That's amazing.
Another one also from America. You might know about this. Well, you might both know about this, but I think Barry might certainly. Do you know what happened at the funeral of American President Andrew Jackson, and which member of his household showed him up and didn't get the mood of the occasion?
Did he have like a daughter who didn't like wearing sleeves on her dress or something? The 1800s, that was basically like she streaked.
What do you reckon, Pete? Any ideas?
Yeah, now I'm thinking of certain, like, it was an open casket. Did someone drop a monocle in there? I don't know what people wore back then.
His nickname was Old Hickory, which is a type of wood, so they think he was the coffin and they tried to put the coffin inside him.
Yes, like a turducken.
Like a turducken. A cough jacken.
Yes, just this horrible kind of like bloated wooden angular skin bag that they
coffin,
kind of
coffin shaped man.
This guy is the worst. Whoever did this was the worst.
And some Russian guy was like, I've got an idea for some dolls to commemorate this occasion.
Okay, now the idea's in my head. That's how I want to be buried, like me inside my wife, inside my parents, inside...
Yes.
No, that's awful. That's appalling. Take that. This sounds like a Barry Cryer joke, but Andrew Jackson had a pet parrot that outlived him.
Oh, no.
And apparently the parrot had to be removed from the funeral because it was swearing so loudly.
Oh, no respect. No respect these parrots.
No. Oh, he was a massive racist. He deserved it. That's what the parrot was saying.
Yeah, well, yeah. What would you have preferred as if the parrot had sort of like in a bass baritone started singing Danny Boy?
He stepped forward to do the eulogy.
So you get nuts everywhere for crying. He's cracking nuts off the top of his head. What? Why is the parrot even there? The parrot doesn't know anything. It's a parrot for crying out loud. Let it free. It's
what are they expecting?
What? Who's keeping that parrot? Let it out.
They're expecting him to be very respectful of the occasion, and you know its colours. It would cut its plumage would turn black, would show up in a little veil.
They might have been wanting to do a, I think it's called a sky funeral, which is part of Zoroastrian tradition. Do you know about this?
Yeah, we've mentioned it. They do it in Buddhism as well, but they leave the body to be eaten by the birds.
Oh, on top of a big. Sometimes they put them on a big tower sort of thing. I seem to recall.
Yes, a dakma, tower of silence. Yeah.
Obviously, that's fine if you're doing it sort of in the middle of the desert in Iran, but you try sticking a bird feeder full of your gran and trill, and it does not go down well.
Questions will be asked.
Yes.
Yeah.
You chatted earlier, Barry, about a stand-up funeral, which, once again, I cannot emphasise how awful that would be, but there is such a thing as a funeral clown. In various cultures around the world, there have been, you know, the Day of Fools, where the fool becomes emperor and mocks the king. In Roman times, was someone called an archimimus, a more funny man. There's a first century historian called Suetonius, who I presume was a fat pudding of a man, who, when writing in his Life of Tiberius, described one performer cajoling the crowd at the funeral of Emperor Vespasian. And apparently the antics include openly cracking jokes on the ridiculous expense of the funeral and actually saying how much better it would have been to have just thrown the emperor's body in the river and saved the country money.
Wow. To be fair, I think Alexander the Great, it's obviously not Roman, but Alexander the Great, when he died in 323 BC, his funeral was said to have cost as much as $600 million in modern money.
Bloody hell.
He had a gold coffin on a gold carriage pulled by 60 horses. It doesn't say whether the horses were also gold, but yeah. 600 million quid on a funeral.
Is that a party as well, or is that just the actual thing itself? You know, the headstone and all that business?
Well, because he went all the way from Babylon to Macedonia. It was quite a long route. So, and I imagine if he had lots of mourners and soldiers, he had his entire army with them. So presumably the expense was having to put up the soldiers in every hotel they came on.
An EasyJet as well. You get EasyJet, get you with the extras.
Yeah.
By comparison, by the way, Princess Diana's funeral cost $12 million.
Is that including the fee for the assassins? Since we are talking about grand funeral processions, my favourite one of these, this is not really a procession, but the story of the death and entombment of Genghis Khan. I'm sure all of the listeners know all about him, the Mongol leader who managed to unite lots of individual Mongol tribes to essentially be the leader of the largest land empire in the history of Earth, stretching all the way from the Chinese coast up to the very edge of Europe. But when he died, in the tradition of his people, his burial place was meant to be kept a secret. There are various accounts of how this was done. So apparently what happened, his body was carried to his tomb by an army, which killed anyone it encountered on the road.
Wow.
It's the equivalent of, you know, in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, when Maid Marian and her lady-in-waiting is taken to see Kevin Costner's bottom underneath a waterfall, that they are blindfolded so that they don't know the way and aren't blinded by the full moon that they're greeted with. But that is just the start of it. After he was buried, the soldiers trampled his gravesite under the hooves of 1,000 horses, so no one could work out where it was. And some legends say that even those soldiers killed the slaves who dug the grave. It doesn't just end there. Apparently, according to Marco Polo, what happened was that once these slaves were killed, the soldiers who were sent to guard these slaves were also killed by another group of soldiers who then apparently committed suicide.
You know when they say, you know, everyone in history is related to Genghis Khan? We're so fucking lucky that there's anyone in history left after Genghis Khan died. They could have just kept going.
Awful business. That's amazing.
Yeah.
There's also a tale of people are still looking for the grave. because, you know, archaeologists cannot be dissuaded from their work. But there is a legend that the grave was rediscovered 30 years after the Khan's death. Apparently, according to this tale, a young camel was buried with the Khan, and the camel's mother was later found weeping at the grave of its child.
Wow.
Have I made you sad with the story of a weeping camel?
Yeah, no, all the deaths of those humans, not so much, but the sad camel really got me. The Disney approach.
I've spent an entire day watching a guy on YouTube who rehooves or fixes the broken hooves of these cows in a field, and he's my new influencer, and I've decided I'm not going to eat meat anymore. So I'm very sad about the camels.
There is a world of bizarre funeral rites in Papua New Guinea and also the Philippines. From the brief reading that I did, in the Philippines, people will bury you, depending on what part of the Philippines you're from, on a cliff, underneath the kitchen, in the garden, up a tree. Just, there's all sorts of different places you can go. But in Papua New Guinea, among the Dani people, when a loved one or a member of your family dies, to commemorate it, any women and children related to the deceased have to cut off one of their fingers at the knuckle. This article is joined by a picture of a woman holding up a hand missing five fingers at the knuckles.
I have to say, that practice has been banned now.
Yes, yes, it has.
It's always funny, it's always the women in these situations, isn't it? It's like sati in India, which is also practiced in various other countries as well, but and in various other cultures, but widowed women had to throw themselves on their husband's funeral pyre, presented as a voluntary act, but very often women just being dragged to the funeral, as depicted in Around the World in 80 Days. Fog and Passepartout Save Aouda. But one of the suggestions about why they used to do it is that it was introduced to prevent wives from killing their wealthy husbands and marrying their real lovers. And it's noticeable that they don't do the same for preventing husbands killing their wealthy wives.
Women in that part of the world, a lot more flammable.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently so. Pete, I'm pretty certain, as a student of Japanese culture, you'll be able to tell us what pachinko is.
Pachinko is a very loud gambling arcade game where you buy a load of balls first. You go into the pachinko parlor and a man asks for money for a big tray of balls. You put the balls in the top of the machine and you manipulate a kind of flipper. It's kind of like an old bagatelle game, I think. And you either win more balls or lose all of your balls. And then you take the balls you've won or lost to the man and say, I've made myself more balls, or I've got more balls at this machine, or I've got fewer balls now. And he gives you a token, and then you have to go, because of the gambling rules in Japan, you're not allowed to exchange that for money. You have to go around the corner to another business that's obviously affiliated to the pachinko parlor and exchange that for cash. It's a way of circumventing, a very noisy way of circumventing the anti-gambling rules in Japan, and it's a weird game. I don't think anybody from the West has ever played correctly.
No, not at all. You're right with the weird labyrinthine gambling laws. It's a little bit when I'm trying to get some writing done and I put a social media lock on my computer and my phone with a password and another password and put everything in the other room, knowing that 20 minutes later I'm going to unlock the three passwords and my phone and my computer and just go straight on social media anyway.
and then kill the soldiers that gave you that password. And then kill us. Yeah.
There is a pachinko game manufacturer called Heiwa, who in 2001 had to replace 500,000 machines that had broken from wear and tear, and decided to give a funeral for all of the thousands of machines that had served in the front line of Japanese gambling. And it was held at a popular Buddhist temple. There was incense, mourners in black suits, chanting monks with flowers, normally where a photo of the deceased would normally be found on the altar. There was a golden pachinko machine that represented all of its deceased brethren.
When they were burying the machine, did they have to actually go get a token and bring that token to another funeral parlor and bury that bury that coffin instead?
Well, yeah. I mean the equivalent here is just getting a gambling, like a Deal or No Deal Noel Edmonds gambling machine, and just
from the pub,
from the pub down the road, and just you know, throwing that on a fire and having a very solemn funeral for the best fruity in town.
Did many mourners show?
Loads of pachinko fans.
Lots of other very sad pachinko machines.
There was a 21-armed bandit salute. For my choice, we're going to one of the most famous Englishmen of all time, who was actually French, and a story that we may have told on the podcast before, but it is so repulsive and weird that I have to tell it again. We're going to the funeral of William the Conqueror. So, William the Conqueror was on the battlefield fighting and became ill and collapsed either through the heat and effort of fighting or because he was thrown from a horse and injured. And apparently his internal organs were so badly ruptured that even though he was carried off alive, no treatment could save him. On his deathbed, rather than conferring the crown on his eldest son, Robert, he chose the younger brother, William Rufus. And that led, as you can imagine, to a lot of displeasure and disagreement in the court. What then happened was that when his body was laid in state, it was looted almost immediately by his elder son's supporters, meaning that the king's body was left lying naked on the floor while people sort of scuttled off with all of his wealth. Eventually, one of the knights took pity on the king and arranged for the body to be embalmed, as it turned out, quite badly, and removed to Cannes for its burial. Now, this took, as you can imagine, a bit of time, and hygiene and health and safety in the late 11th century wasn't the best. So when it came for the local monks to meet the corpse, fire broke out in that town. So the body, as well as being a little bit overripe from death, started to heat up a little bit.
No. Oh dear.
At the same time, while some mourners were gathered around, his body started being heckled. Some mourners arrived and started heckling the funeral and claimed that William Rufus, his son, had robbed his father of the land on which the current abbey they were in France, stood. That basically led to some haggling at the funeral, at which point compensation was paid.
What? Like they're holding the coffin over the 6-foot drop. I'm like, wait a second. You haven't paid rent for that yet.
It just makes me laugh because it's kind of like, right, like his wife's probably been going, can you just go down and ask William if you can have the land back? And he's like, I'll do it tomorrow. What do you mean he's dead? Oh, and then he's forced to go and confront a corpse effectively. You're not going to get anybody out of it, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's sort of the opposite of you come to me on this, the day of my daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
But the worst thing was this. It's William was not the first and certainly not the last corpulent English king. And through a life of good living and a death of bad hygiene, his corpse had become so bloated that when they tried to fit it into the stone sarcophagus, it exploded. To quote from the Chronicle of the Time, Orderic, the swollen bowels burst and an intolerable stench assailed the nostrils of the bystanders and the whole crowd. 2 stars.
Pete, what have you brought?
My nan's funeral was rubbish, like absolutely rubbish. I haven't been to many funerals. I've been lucky enough to not lose a lot of people that I care about. And my nan's is about 10, 12 years ago, I think. You know, she lived to the ripe old age of like 95, 96, 97, something like that. And so she passes and we all go, all like 5 or 6 of us, very small family, go to say goodbye to her. She had like a humanist funeral. She wasn't particularly religious. And it was the most bizarre situation ever. We get in there and the priest, or whatever you call a humanist guy who stands there and talks about the deceased, I don't know who'd briefed him, but he didn't sound like he liked my nan. apparently my nan didn't suffer fools gladly, which I knew anyway, but it's not something I found out until a couple of years later, that she was like the catalyst for like our entire family just being a bit shit, like people not talking to other people because she used to play little games and mess around. So this lovely woman who used to keep a bowl of Spanish, as they used to call it, a bowl of licorice, whenever I came round, I used to just graze on it all day. She was this wonderful woman in my eyes, but turns out she was an absolute C word. She was a nightmare woman that nobody liked, but I didn't find out that about her until the end, until her funeral, when the priest basically in the eulogy just sort of said that she was a bit of a cunt, to be honest. So
I love that doesn't ever seem to happen. You're like,
no,
every funeral you ever go to,
tell the truth about that person, I suppose. Yeah, very, very bizarre. It was in this kind of like church hall. There wasn't, for obvious reasons, obviously not a church. They didn't have an organist or anyone play the music live, so they had this weird little, it wasn't a keyboard, it wasn't like a Bontempi or Yamaha keyboard, but it was the MIDI bit of that production, basically. A MIDI interface, basically, that you had these like bespoke cards that you plugged in that had like, you know, a couple of kilobytes of data on, a couple of songs, and it had a speaker, and you'd put these cards in. And I, like, as a tech fan, I'm like, what is this? This is amazing. This is new tech I've never seen before. But it's not. It's just that it's a keyboard with preset tunes with a little card in it that just plays the music and doesn't have a keyboard, so you can't really play any music yourself. Anyway, he selected the wrong card for this fucking song, and so we were trying to fit the lyrics to one hymn to the music of another, and I'm like, this is
so
ridiculous.
You were at a funeral doing a Radio 4 parlor game.
It really is. It was like something from Radio 4. It was incredible. Yeah. Then we go to the burial spot, and she's getting buried on top of me granddad. 400-500 quid. My family has spent on these guys digging a hole. They dug it so wonky. She goes in, and she doesn't go in flat. She goes in sort of like, almost like a slide. And so, like, I can see the top of the, it's like, they, so I know for a fact, as soon as we F off, someone's going to have to push down the top of the coffin and try and throw some soil on the top. Because we were like, you know when you, like, do ashes to ashes, just, you know, throw the soil on top of the, or flowers on top of the, yeah, on top of the coffin. It was just scooting off like a water slide. It was terrible. and all in all, and I was like, how much did this cost? They dug it badly. It's like, my granddad died 25 years before that. He's not going to be lumping it up down there. It'll be in bits. So it's not his fault. So it was just absolutely bizarre. I just find funerals weird, strange. They never serve the person that you've just buried. It's always just about something else, and it's always about other people. So I found them very funny. But I did find a story online about a man who was buried in 2008, I think it was. A man, his name was Kenneth Tex Roberts, 80-year-old. He's, you know, fairly good innings in Caparella, somewhere called Caparella, I believe. Anyway,
I like that you said a fairly good innings.
80's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, 80's bang on the nose for life expectancy. I just think you're damning him with faint praise there.
Yeah, do better, Kenneth. Yeah.
He's done all right. But so the funeral home employee has prepared the body and is showing it off. Hey, look at this. Showing it to the family. Like,
bring it up and show the judges.
Guess how many marshmallows I put in his bum. It's like, you know. Dave, is this your first day or your last day? I don't know. So the employee shows the grieving widow the body after preparation, and this woman Janie Halsey, she told the funeral home employee that the man in the casket was not her husband. The funeral home employee clearly panicked, tried to style it out, and he said, "That's how they look when they die."
No.
That's a big move. I'm loving that, to be honest. How they look when they die is actually a completely different person in the case of Kenneth. Roberts' wife was told that it's actually him. You just look very different when you die. And she's like, okay, right, fine. The funeral service went on the next day. 200 mourners, very popular man, passing the casket containing some fucking rando.
I'm so sorry, but like, just taking their word for it when they say they look a bit different when they die, and you're like, not sure, but fine. Yeah, I would have pressed for a little bit more proof at that stage of the proceedings.
What if I tell you, though, he was wearing the dead man's clothes? He was wearing his clothes. He was in his tracksuit.
Oh, my God.
See, that reminds me of the classic joke, a grieving wife goes into the funeral parlour, is shown the body, and she says, that's not my husband. And the man working in the funeral parlour goes, is that not your husband? I'm so sorry. Can I just ask, what was your husband also wearing a blue suit like this gentleman? And she said, yes, he was. Oh, gotcha, cool. And he turns and shouts back into the funeral parlour, Fred, swap the heads on number 2 and number 4.
So the daughter of the deceased told the Daily News, we kissed him, I touched him, some of us thought it was him. So they've just been kissing a random dead person on the protesting that it was actually the... So the funeral director admitted to the family that there was a mix-up right before the funeral's about to start, and then all hell broke loose. Children were hysterical, relatives cried, a 19-year-old had a seizure, a woman had an asthma attack, they all went to the hospital. The man in Robert's casket appeared older than Robert's, and relatives were told that the man had been killed, said wearing Robert's body had been in a casket at a different funeral home but run by the same funeral director. And when they finally located and brought the real Roberts, when it rocked up, I'm imagining like a hearse with screaming wheels, yes, kind of coming around the thing.
Open the glove box and they took a siren out and put it on the roof.
Yeah, exactly. It is the cops.
A hand comes out of the coffin and puts a little siren on top of it as well.
Yes. And when I'm enjoying that immensely. When it came around the corner, the legs of Roberts were hanging out of a tilted casket when the hearse door was opened because the funeral employees were driving so fast, hitting bumps, the casket opened. It was unspeakable, the new story. I just think it's such a wonderful, just everything that could go wrong went wrong, which I think is just beautiful.
That has such shadows of that bit in Father Ted where they go, you let Dougal do a funeral. Just cuts to this.
I've got a couple of very quick Reddit ones. You know, like when they do like an Ask Me Anything, not an Ask Me Anything, but you know, it's worst funerals, you know, great for stealing material, I'll tell you what. I was at a funeral where someone's 7-year-old thought it would be funny to give the corpse a wet willy.
Oh my God.
Which is just fantastic.
Is the phrase a wet willy a universal one?
I guess not. It's licking your finger and then jamming it in someone's ears, isn't it? Which is unwelcome, yes, whether you're alive or dead, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I went to the funeral of a co-worker's fiancé and her ex showed up. As everyone was lined up to say goodbye, we all witnessed this deceased woman's ex lean into the coffin and kiss her on the lips in front of her fiancé. I think that's imprisonable, personally. And finally, for now, when my mother's uncle died, my 8-year-old cousin cried a lot at the funeral to help him calm down. His parents took him for a little walk around the cemetery where he noticed his name written on one of the tombstones.
Oh, no!
It's like that brass eye. This is the last thing we wanted to happen. But yes, the man who could not be found is very much my new story I'm going to go for.
It's like a really dark version of Catch Me If You Can.
Yes. Look it. Identify Me If You Can.
That's amazing. There was an article in the British media a couple of weeks ago about how attitudes to funerals in the UK have changed recently, and, you know, they think sort of tombstones are a bit old-fashioned and hymns and so on. So a company called, a life insurance company, they always are, aren't they, who commissioned these surveys, called Dead Happy, did a survey where they found that over 50% of respondents in the UK would like to be remembered in a fun, alternative way. 37% of people think benches named after you are old-fashioned. 26% think gravestones are outdated. So instead, 25% of us want to be made into a diamond. 15% want our ashes to be made into a firework. And 12% want to be sent to space.
I mean, fireworks, just terrorism, really. Go the whole hog.
Yeah.
Do an atrocity of some kind.
Yeah, why not? 1 in 10 like the idea of a Viking funeral, which we've mentioned, the idea of a boat being sent out to sea on fire. 5% want to be cryogenically frozen. 6% want to be stuffed by a taxidermist. I want to know where they intend for themselves to be kept. Because, you know, University College London has Jeremy Bentham, and they're going to run out of space if everyone just queues up to go, well, I want the space next to him. The most popular choice, apparently, though, was to send someone you love on the holiday of a lifetime. So instead of spending the money on the funeral, be buried as cheaply as possible and use all the money on a loved one being sent for a nice...
I knew this is why I try and form friendships. This is what I can get down with, to be honest. Sod, you know, being a notable utilitarian and getting your head chopped off.
Yeah.
Box. I think very much, yeah, befriend people who are going to send you on cool holidays.
That's why you sounded sad stuff. Earlier when you said you haven't lost many people that you like. keep yes, waiting exactly, for that yeah. trip to Cancun.
Yeah, damn right. I want to go spring break, baby.
Yeah.
I think I'd like to mix the two of those and be taxidermied / embalmed and then put inside a giant bottle, like a ship in a bottle, and then just put in the ocean.
And sailed on a holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't mention endocannibalism, which is eating the dead, which various cultures have done down the years. I quite like suspended burial. You alluded to that, Ben. The Bo people of southwest China were...
Sorry, I hear that is the Bo people. Just
the
Bo
people, yes.
All shepherdesses.
Yeah, of course. Well, they were wiped out by the Ming Dynasty in 1573. They were the victims of genocide, so this unique people in China are effectively extinct. Apart from the hanging coffins that they left behind them. So there are various instances of these. The most famous one is above Crab Stream in southwest China, as I mentioned, in Gongjiang County. It's 160 coffins placed along the cliffs and in natural caves. And some of the coffins on these cliffs are on sort of wooden posts that have been hammered into the cliffs, and then the coffin is just placed lying on top of it on this precipice. And some of them, they've got murals painted on the walls sometimes. And the locals refer to the Bo people as the sons of the cliffs or the subjugators of the sky. And archaeologists don't really know why they suspend the coffins on the cliffs like this. And one of the suggestions is that maybe it was just to stop them being disturbed in a quite a difficult to reach place. Marco Polo observed the ritual, saying when deceased, they had their bodies put in a box and taken to the mountains to be put in caves or hung out where others cannot reach. So yeah, it may just have been that maybe they had a problem with grave diggers and they thought that's the easiest way to do it.
As you start to decompose, though, there's going to be a point where you're going to fall down that cliff again, aren't you? I'm not against it. I think that's quite spectacular. That's wonderful.
Yeah, but they're still there. You can look up and see the coffins. Some of them are, you know, in quite a bad state, yeah, they're all there.
Fascinating. There's a set of crime investigators in, I think, Texas. They basically you can donate your body to this cause, and they are forensic pathologists, and they basically like put your body in a boot of a car or basically just out in the woods and stuff, and it's used to research how the body would naturally deal with being inside a car bonnet or just out and about in the woods or whatever, to aid crime investigation.
Yeah, so you can see what a body would look like after if it's there for 5 months in swampy water or something.
Yeah, what I want is just to find like the worst, weirdest crime, and I want them to recreate my body and just put my armpits and on a roof or something and go, yeah, this guy's armpits up there. Cool.
I think Stephen Fry visited that place when he did that documentary, Stephen Fry in America.
Right, okay.
I vaguely remember seeing it there. But yeah, it is really... So cool. I mean, it's another version of donating your body to science, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
The Malagasy people in Madagascar, they do a thing called Famadihana, or the turning of the bones. When you die, they dig up the remains of your relatives as well and wrap them in fresh silken shrouds, and they dance at you and around the tomb to live music and then reinter you all. And they've been doing that for over 3 centuries, apparently. Obviously, some of the more recent arrivals in the form of the Christian churches and evangelical churches are trying their very best to ban this practice.
Are they just trying to make, over a period of decades, a xylophone?
Under the sea.
I read about other very well attended funerals, and obviously when Abraham Lincoln died, I think a lot of people probably know this, there was a big train procession afterwards. He lay in state at the White House and then at the Capitol Rotunda for a few more days, and then they had it on a train to Springfield, Illinois, where he was from, to be buried. 1.5 million mourners were able to visit his body. 7 million people were able to stand and watch the train go by as it passed through 7 states and 180 cities. The most well-attended funeral apparently in history was the funeral of C.N. Anadurai in 1969. He was the chief minister in the Tamil Nadu region of India, and for some reason, 15 million people showed up to his funeral in Chennai.
Why? What was so remarkable about him?
I don't know whether they were... You know the way you sometimes get these people who want to break world records? I don't imagine it was that. He may have been a very popular politician and beloved figure. Obviously, you know, more widely broadcast funerals have had a lot of attendance. I think when Pope John Paul died, there was 2 billion people watched that. 2.5 billion people watched Princess Diana's funeral. Michael Jackson's funeral, they gave away tickets to his funeral. 17,500 winners were able to attend his service, even though more than 1 million people entered the lottery in its first 24 hours.
That was such an interesting kind of like couple of months, wasn't it? It was so nobody knew why it happened, how it happened. And I don't even remember what his funeral was like, to be honest. Who sang there? Because obviously, you know, he died under a bit of a cloud, has to be said. So
yes.
I imagine it's quite politically difficult for anyone to get involved.
I remember Mariah Carey was there, I know, and Queen Latifah and lots of other celebs and the Jacksons, obviously. Yeah. And his bronze casket was plated with gold, lined with blue velvet, and cost $25 million. Good use of the Jackson estate there.
Why is he doing that to himself? Yeah. Goodness sake.
We've raised all these funds for the concerts in the O2, but let's splash them all out on the coffin. And I want to mention Judy Garland's funeral, which was on the 27th of June 1969. Now, members of the gay community might know June 28th, 1969 is quite a seminal moment in queer history, because that was the date of the Stonewall riots, the day after Judy Garland's funeral in Manhattan. 21,000 people jammed the streets, and the Time reported the story at the time when she died. I think she was only 48 when she died, with the headline, End of the Rainbow. And she was already at that point of an LGBT icon. Although she was, there was sort of a little bit of, you know, snobbiness and homophobia around her popularity within the gay community. Time magazine had a quote from psychiatrists who suggested that she was admired by queer people as a model of resilience because of her troubles with drug addiction and suicide attempts, and she channeled that into creative outlets. And so she is the Elvis for homosexuals, wrote Barry Walters in the LGBTQ news outlet The Advocate, a symbol of emotional liberation, a woman who struggled to live and love without restraint. She couldn't do it in her real life, of course, and neither could her fans, but she did it in her songs, and with them she brought along anyone who similarly dared to care too much. But obviously heterosexual publications and homophobic publications thought it was unbecoming and kitsch and lots of things. But when she died, trans activist Sylvia Rivera heard about the funeral. She became hysterical and she rang a friend of hers, Tammy Novak. Tammy Novak, sounding more stoned than usual, Rivera said. And Novak invited her to come to the Stonewall Inn in New York. Novak said, it's what Martha Judy would have wanted, to have a dance. So Rivera popped a black beauty, which is a pill of some sort, headed over. And in the wee hours of the morning, the NYPD raided the bar, and the riots ensued. People they were trying to take away fighting back. And there is a story that people like Novak were involved, that a policeman tried to put her in a van and she fought back. And there were bricks being thrown, apparently, with, you know, rest in peace, Judy, and all of that stuff. And there's a book written in 1997, The Gay Metropolis, by Charles Kaiser, which sort of popularized the theory that it was the emotions over Judy's funeral which had led to the emotional backlash. There are some in the gay community who would say that that overly simplifies what had been a long brewing desire for civil rights. And it was just feeding into the countercultural revolutions that were happening in other aspects of society at the time. Mark Siegel, who was a witness to it and founder of the Philadelphia Gay News, wrote in 2015 on the release of the film Stonewall that the emphasis on the Garland theory was the most disturbing historical liberty in the film and downright insulting to us as a community. And David Carter, who wrote Stonewall, The Riots That Sparked the Gay Revolution, said, the only account written in 1969 that suggests that Garland's death contributed to the riots is by a heterosexual who sarcastically proposes the idea to ridicule gay people and the riots.
Yeah, it sounds like the weaponization of gay panic.
Yeah, it does a little bit, to be honest, and it feels like it tries to belittle it. Obviously, there will have been people who were there drinking because it was Judy's funeral and they wanted a sense of community. But to be fair, the NYPD showed up and tried to drag them all into the back of vans, so they very much cast the first stone. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've gone to the world of people who wake up at their own funerals for my world's worst funeral, because one of us had to.
Right. Of course. And surely if you wake up at your own funeral, surely the first thing you have to say is, what year is this?
Yes. They're, Marty, it's your kids.
Yeah.
Talking about your kids. I've got this one story from the UK, and then I'll tell you my main choice. At the village of Braffing, or Brawing, if you're from there, apologies. It's spelled like laughing, but with a B-R at the start, in Hertfordshire. Celebrates Old Man's Day on October the 2nd every year. We just missed it. And it's not a celebration of old men, as this article says, but of a guy called Matthew Wall, who was almost buried alive in October, on October the 2nd, 1571. Wall was preparing for his wedding when he died. He was being carried in the coffin to the church, and one of the pallbearers slipped on some wet leaves on a road called Fleece Lane, and they dropped the casket. And that shock of the coffin dropping woke Wall from the coma he had slipped into. And he began banging on the lid of the coffin, and they let him out, and he went on to get married, had two sons, and lived for 24 more years, and died in 1595. But in his will, he requested that every October 2nd thereafter, the church bell should be rung for a funeral, and then a wedding, in his memory. And that Fleece Lane, where the ballbearer had slipped, should be swept free of leaves, which seems counterintuitive, given it was that it was unswept, and the pallbearer slipped on some leaves was the reason he was waken in the first place. But nevertheless, they still do it to this day. They ring the church bell, and the priest and local children sweep the lane every 2nd of October.
Just imagine how tense his second funeral must have been.
Yes. Now, when he died, someone came up, put a bullet in the back of his head just to be sure.
No number three. No secret.
Yeah. Yeah. But for my Wordsworth funeral, I've gone to the year 1915. And this is in America, South Carolina, and it's the funeral of Essie Dunbar. 32-year-old Essie Dunbar was declared dead after suffering a fit of epilepsy. Funeral was planned for the next day. They worked fast, 11 a.m. She would have been buried earlier, apparently, but her sister lived in the next town, and so they wanted to call her to see the corpse. And Essie's sister didn't make it, despite the delay. She didn't actually see the ceremony, despite it being the early 1900s and the ceremony probably going on for hours. And she appeared a few minutes after her sister's body was lowered into the grave. But because she'd arrived so soon after, they thought, you know what? Let's pull the coffin back up again. Let's get it out. We'll exhume her and she can pay her last respects. You know, 5 minutes late is barely late at all at a funeral when the corpse is already in the coffin in the ground. So they dug up the coffin and they unlocked it and opened the lid, and her sister was there looking mournful. And Essie sat up in her coffin.
Oh, like full Undertaker in WWE.
Oh, whole scale. The three ministers who had been conducting the funeral fell into the grave.
2-for-1.
One of whom suffered 3 broken ribs while the other two were climbing over him to try and get out again. And they fled the scene with her sister and the rest of the mourners. But Essie didn't help things because she climbed out of the coffin, ran after the burial party as they fled into town, dressed in her funeral garb, covered in mud, shouting after them, distressing the rest of the townsfolk as well.
Oh, I'm sorry the townsfolk were distressed. It's just been reborn.
Surely is the cherry on top of that. Someone slipped on a jukebox in a local pub and accidentally put on the Benny Hill theme music.
Yeah. And for years afterwards, people would still like spread rumors in the air about her being a zombie and all of these things. She eventually died 40 years later in 1955. The internet disagrees. 1955, some stories say 1962. Either way, the newspaper that announced her death had the headline, "Second funeral is held for South Carolina woman." So, our candidates this week for the world's worst funeral are Ben's suggestion of the funeral of William the Conqueror, Stinky Will, as they used to call him. Pete's suggestion of the funeral of Kenneth Tex Roberts, the man who showed up late to his own funeral. And my suggestion of the funeral of Essie Dunbar, the first funeral of Essie Dunbar, which ended in a carry-on style chase through her local town. We've got the gross option in Ben's. We've got the mistaken corpse option, which seems like it was inevitable we'd have one of those from Pete, and we've got the she wasn't actually dead anyway option from me, which is the other inevitable. So we've covered the three possible options, I feel.
Yeah, there must be somewhere out there the perfect funeral of someone of the wrong person who looks gross and actually isn't dead anyway.
Yeah.
It's just bad funeral admin, this whole thing, isn't it? Everyone's just got bad admin. They're just messing things up.
Yes. I have a personal favourite, and it is my own. The scene of the three ministers falling into the grave and then scrambling over one another to get out is very funny. Yeah. It's like a very like low budget version of that Lord of the Rings battle. But also, I was talking about this to friend of the show Paul Duncan McGarrity yesterday as we were discussing funerals, and he said surely the worst funeral is the one where you end up with fewer dead bodies than you started with. And when I read this story, I was like, you know what? It's got all the calamity and the terror and the zombiness. And at the end of it, they didn't even have a corpse in the first place. So I am going to pick the first funeral of Essie Dunbar as the world's worst funeral. Before we go, I've got to give you some of the world's best news of the week. And I found this story. A woman in Canada was awoken earlier this week when a rock crashed through the ceiling of her home and narrowly missed her as she lay on the bed. Police were called, and they initially thought maybe there was a building site nearby and they'd maybe been conducting some explosions and it had blown a rock over the street and through her ceiling and it had nearly killed her. But the construction workers said there hadn't been any blasts. And so if they have agreed, an expert seemed to concur, that this is a meteorite. Ruth Hamilton, who was asleep in Golden in the Rocky Mountains of British Columbia, on the 3rd of October, was woken by her dog barking. She didn't even wake at the sound of the meteorite crashing through the ceiling. She wasn't even sure what to do. She was scared of the dog. She rang 911, and as she was speaking with the operator, she turned over her pillow and saw the rocket slipped down. It had gone down through the gap between the two pillows. She'd been lying with her head on one of the pillows. It was that close to hitting her. There had been a meteor shower in the skies above Western Canada that night. Yeah, Hamilton says she's very glad to still be alive. I was in shock, and I just sat here for a few hours shaking. The odds of that happening are so small, so I'm pretty grateful to be alive. So I had a look at what the odds of that are, just out of interest, and I found the website lottoland.co.uk, and through various calculations, they have come to the conclusion that based on how many meteors hit the Earth every year, and the surface area of the Earth, and the possibility of that area being inhabited, and the lifespan of a possible human, the probability of getting hit by a meteorite in your lifetime, it's probably 1 in 840 million.
Wow.
Yeah, NASA says that it's very unlikely by and large. But the only person in recent times to have actually been hit by a meteorite, as far as we know, was in 1954, a woman called Ann Hodges in Alabama in the USA. A 4-kilo meteorite crashed through the roof of her rental home, bounced off a radio, and struck her, leaving her with a pineapple-sized burn mark.
Oh, no thanks.
And we get hit by about 500 meteors a year, but lots of them are tiny and they burn up in the atmosphere. So this was big enough for it to actually reach the surface. And there was a global media frenzy around this story, obviously, because you'd been hit by a meteorite. And a legal circus over who owned it. Because Anne said, well, she owned it. She was staying in a rental property, so her landlady claimed she owned it. And the US military, because of course, showed up and said, no, we own it.
This big flying pineapple.
Since then, there have only been very few cases of individuals being struck by bits of meteorite, and it's usually that they get hit by a fragment bouncing off something else.
That'd be a cracking funeral if there's a mourner standing at the edge of a grave and a meteorite comes down, clonks them on the back of the head, and they fall into the grave as well.
Yes. I was about to say, well done, Ruth Hamilton, for dodging that bullet, but I suspect that that's not the right phrase.
I guess people, because whenever there's like a horrible mass shooting or whatever, it was sort of say the gunman ran into whatever and he shot indiscriminately. And I always think if I was shot by that man, I would feel very discriminated against. That's all I'm saying. And imagine being hit by an asteroid or a meteorite. Imagine being clouted. You would feel like the complete polar opposite of the chosen one. You'd feel like the worst man or woman in the world. You'd be like, that never that happens to like one person ever, and I'm that person. That sucks.
Yeah. Before we go, Pete, where can people find out more about you and your work?
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. I help run a podcast company called Stack, and we can be found at stack.london. That's stak.london. All of our shows are up there, and all of my nonsense can be found on those RSS feeds, I think.
Very good. Meanwhile, we're all off to realise we've booked the wrong Pete Donaldson, and we need to get him to another podcast recording across town prompto. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Goodbye.